Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm out here in Las Vegas. Sorry I didn't record yesterday, but Vegas happened. I'm joined tonight, slash this morning? It's mostly this morning.
1:30 in the morning. I think it's this morning so far. We'll see.
This morning. That's Jeff Siegel of earlybirdrights.com, which if you care at all about cap stuff, like that's where you need to be. Peachtree Hoops, where they cover the Hawks, and Locked On Hawks. He hosts that with, host that with Brad Rowland. Thanks for hopping on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You guys should follow him on Twitter at JG Siegel. I'll spell it out, JGSIEGEL. Great follow for everything cap space. And every time any kind of movement happens, you update all of your cap stuff. And that's hugely important this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that sort of differentiates my site and my Twitter feed from other people is like, I'm not waiting 4 hours to update my stuff. I'm not waiting 2 days sometimes for some other guys. It's literally, I mean, I can do it from my phone within about 5 minutes. If I'm on a computer, it's 30 seconds, 45 seconds, because it's all automated. So, you know, I've harped on this on a few other podcasts. If you heard us some of that, and so you know, if you're interested in anything that relates to the salary cap, Early Bird Rights is the way
I just like helping people who I respect as much as I possibly can. So hop on earlybirdrights.com for all of that stuff and follow them on Twitter. Today's show, we're going to talk about Luol Deng and the Lakers' weird offseason. I think we can call it a weird offseason. We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to talk about what we've seen from the first 3 days-ish of first three games that the Lakers have played out here in Vegas. I have been in the house for one. You haven't seen any in person yet, but there's still stuff that I think we can glean from the performances thus far, and we can look back on draft stuff as well. So, fun show ahead. You guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find me. Let's hop right into this. My theory is, if the Lakers, given the signings that the Lakers have made, Lance Stephenson, most offensive among them, it would seem that, I don't like using the word punt, but you can make the argument it looks like they're punting this season.
It looks like they're making a very strong effort toward having as many playmakers as possible, which is strange if you have no play finishers.
Yeah.
We've talked about this sort of offline. Like, they don't have, you can only have so many playmakers before you need somebody to shoot the ball on the other end of that.
That's a great way to play.
You know, if you kick the ball to Lonzo in the corner, his first instinct is going to be to like drive and kick again.
Yeah.
Rondo's the same way. Lance is the same way. LeBron's the same way. Where's the guy who's just going to take that open shot? Like, it's going to be...
Luke is a future Hall of Famer.
Oh, of course. Right. I mean, he's, you know, I can't pronounce his name, but of course he's going to be a Hall of Famer, and he's going to be great. But if he's not out there, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is probably the best shooter on the team other than Svi.
Yeah.
In terms of just pure shooting. Yeah. Like, so it's...
He shot 38% from 3 years last year.
Which is, on this team, is might as well be 48%.
Yeah. He's basically Kyle Korver mixed with Klay Thompson / Ray Allen on this current Lakers roster. So it comes down to, though, if based on the moves that they've made, a lot of Laker fans are just going to sit here and say, all right, how can the Lakers get rid of Luol Deng's contract? How can that facilitate either a future signing or whatever? Or are they best served stretching him right now? Whatever, like... Whatever scenario that it is, actually, I'll just put that to you right now. Given how things have gone in this offseason, and given what he's owed and the current situation that Lakers cap is in right now, if you were given the keys to the Lakers organization, what would you do?
I'd hold on to him for a year. I don't think trading him at this point makes a ton of sense. And literally, this changed today / yesterday as you guys are listening to this. Once Lance Stephenson officially signed his contract and didn't take the room exception, they sort of moved him into cap space and will use the room on somebody else, maybe. Now that that's happened, they can only get to, if they trade him, of course, they get about $18 million in space. But at this point in the market, is that really necessary? Do you need that? Depending on how they want to build out the rest of their team, it doesn't make a ton of sense to do that, especially because the cost of that isn't free. Like, they're not just going to trade him to somebody who wants him.
Right,
Nobody wants him on that money, and he's going to have to be traded with at least two, probably at, you know, maybe two plus swap rights, first round picks. Like, it's going to be very expensive in this offseason, in this cap environment, to get off of him, because there's only three teams with space left who can take his contract. And, you know, if any contract comes back in that deal, then of course that lessens the Lakers cap space. You can keep him until next summer. Like you said, maybe this season is a bit of a punt, and then you go into next season with Kawhi Leonard dreams, with Jimmy Butler dreams, Kyrie Irving probably not because of his relationship with LeBron. You know, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant.
I really like Chris Middleton.
I mean, he would make a ton of sense among realistic targets who, you know, might not need a max slot. And at that point, you can waive Deng, stretch his salary. You get about an extra $12 million in space instead of $18 million. He'd count for six. You don't have to pay any kind of first-round picks to get off of him. Over these next few years, the Lakers are, we assume, going to be very good. Mm-hmm. And the best thing that a good team can have is those late first-round picks.
Yeah.
Maybe that they're not superstars, but those guys are role players who matter.
And they're cheap.
That's the biggest thing. They're going to be cheap, and they're necessary to sustain long-term success with the team. And that's something that LeBron has sort of indicated with the moves he's made and the comments that have come out sort of around him, that he's not interested in what happened in Cleveland and Miami and then Cleveland again, where he walks away while the city burns to the ground because the team is so screwed.
Yeah, he seems legitimately invested in the Lakers, and that's been cool to see.
Yeah, and he's invested in the long term after he retires, or after he leaves, if he leaves after 3 or 4 years and moves on to whatever team his son is playing for, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens at the end of his contract.
Oh, his son's a future Laker for sure.
Maybe. I mean, he has to go through the draft, technically.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like,
at some point.
If there's something that the Lakers, I could see this being something of an agreement. Like, all right, look, I gave you this long-term commitment. I'm here. I came to your team after a 35-win season. Like, help me out. I want to play with my son. You know,
yeah.
Like a wink, wink, do what you can.
Basically. Yeah. And I would.
We're going to take a quick second. And when we come back, we're going to keep on talking about, because I want to get into some of the punting stuff. And that kind of gets back to or segues us into the summer league and what we've seen thus far. Because the Lakers are going to be heavily reliant on their kids if they aren't trying to punt this season. We'll get to that here in a second. All right, so again, the term punting on the season is one that it's tough to hear regarding LeBron James because of how good he is. It's really a bummer that that's like a possibility. But the only way that they aren't doing that is if they legitimately think that Lonzo Ball can be the point guard next to LeBron next year, that Kyle Kuzma can be a floor spacer next year, Josh Hart can be, you know, KCP may be coming off of the bench next year. I don't know if I necessarily buy it. I think that's a lot to gamble on, but the thinking is there.
I think, yeah, the thinking is definitely there, and I think the interesting part of Lonzo's game, and I'm sure you guys have sort of covered this on Silver Screen and Roll and on the show, that Lonzo's theoretical game fits super well with LeBron's game.
If he shoots, he's the perfect point guard for LeBron.
If he can shoot and he already plays defense at a very high level, like we were talking about earlier today, they are, you know, that's a good partnership.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to, like, is that shot going to come around or not? And I believe in it. I think it will. I think he was good in college. It'll be fine. And he'll have so many more open shots, and he'll have more, you know, better spot up opportunities. He won't be taking as many off the dribble, which is something that he, you know, obviously struggles with. He's going to be fine. I think Lonzo makes sense as a partner next to LeBron James. And then the rest of the guys, you know, we talked about play finishers. Kyle Kuzma doesn't like to pass the ball.
No.
You know, he likes the look of his own shot going in the basket.
Mamba mentality.
You know, and that means he's a play finisher, maybe.
If he tries,
in a way. I mean, he's not like a catch and shoot guy, but he might be a catch and create his own shot guy off of a closeout where he can really, you know, he's got an advantage inherently because of who his teammates are.
That's a perfect point to lead into this. The one thing that I think Laker fans can't quite overstate is the impact that LeBron has on how open these guys are going to be. Like, Kyle Kuzma was never open as often as he's going to be, and he and the passes that he's going to be catching next year are not going to be as clean as the ones he's going to get from LeBron. That kind of thing matters. Again, I'm kind of sort of grasping for straws to make me feel a little bit better about next season. Those are the things that you're hoping for. But in terms of what we've seen from guys that they drafted this year, because again, because of the guys that they signed, they're going to hope that Mo Wagner can do something next year, that Svi Mykhailiuk, who they just made a big commitment to given where he was drafted, can do stuff. Isaac Bonga, I don't think is an NBA player, but with Svi Mykhailiuk in particular here, he has everybody ranting and raving out here in the Laker fan base because of the way he's shooting. Like, do you think that translates?
I think so. I mean, I think he's had some good shooting seasons. He's had obviously some bad shooting seasons in his lead up to being into the NBA. But I think he's going to be so open and so unmolested and uncontested on the perimeter. He's going to get some really good looks, and he's going to be able to eventually perhaps be another one of those, put the ball on the floor and either finish or make some plays for others. You know, if they're really like playmaking
this year better than I thought he could.
Yeah. He's more of a playmaker than I think a lot of people sort of pigeonhole him into, oh, he's a good spot up shooter. Maybe he can shoot on the move. He's a white guy who can shoot from Europe. But he's got some passing to him as well. I mean, obviously the concerns with a guy from Europe for the most part is going to be athleticism and defense, and those concerns are real, and that's why he dropped to the second round. But they do like him. Obviously, they made the financial commitment to him. They gave him, you know, about $700,000 extra dollars, almost doubled his salary from the minimum of what he, you know, should have or could have made.
As a
minimum second round signing. You know, and plus they gave him a third year. It's a team option, but they retain the option to pick that up in 2020-2021. You know, I think they really like him. Obviously, what we've seen in summer league is he's going to be a rotation player for this team as perhaps the team's best shooter in terms of just pure numbers. And then Mo Wagner is going to be one of the team's better shooters. He's going to be able to, you know, he's got the size and the footwork to play that Kevin Love type role. Yeah. You know, the role, not necessarily the rebounder or the, you know, elbow playmaker that Love was, but
no, I don't see that.
But the pick and pop, you know, he's got the footwork and the size to be a good screener and to, you know, pop to three and be, you know, a solid partner for LeBron in that sense. So, you know, the draftees and the kids are almost more exciting than Lance Stevenson and Rajon Rondo and JaVale McGee in terms of, you know, their partnerships and what you see from them in terms of, you know, how they fit with LeBron.
Cavs fans are listening to this right now. You have to imagine, like, could we have gotten a little bit of this commitment? Like, could you have cared even a little bit about Andrew Wiggins? But, you know, whatever. That's not the team I care about. We're going to take one more second here. When we come back, we'll try to wrap up this conversation. It's going to be another semi-shorter show because of everything kind of going on here. But hang tight, and we'll be here in a bit. I wanted to get back to the Wagner thing. I think Wagner is interesting in kind of this regard. And this has been a trend, I think, over all of the guys that the Lakers have drafted recently. Look, this is maybe a hot take, and this isn't inside sourced whatever. I've heard some stuff, but it's for the most part, it's mostly speculation here, that the Lakers knew that they were getting LeBron fairly early on in this process. And I think that's, like, when they drafted, like, Mo Wagner and Svi, Bonga didn't make as much sense, and you know, it's just a weird draft, weird selection there with Anthony Melton,
D'Anthony Melton.
D'Anthony Melton was available, and that kind of bugged me. But with the draftees that the Lakers, the guys that they have drafted, it's old guys, it's older basketball players who can shoot, who fit around a superstar, right? And makes me think that they kind of had an idea about LeBron, but with Wagner, and we talked about this before we went on the pod, I don't care about his rebounding numbers. I never cared about Brook Lopez's rebounding numbers. Give me somebody who boxes out, helps team rebounding, and allows LeBron to board and go.
Yeah, we talked about this, you know, off the air right before we came on. Rebounding is not an individual activity. No. Rebounding is not something where you can look at a guy and he averages 10 boards and that makes him a good rebounder. Rebounding is a team activity where everybody comes together to secure the rebound. And if you never touch the ball, you don't get within 5 feet of the ball, you can be just as responsible for your team getting the rebound as the guy who actually catches it. Right. And we talked about this in sort of relation to Russell Westbrook and how the Thunder's offense goes through the roof when he gets a defensive rebound. It's like 123, 124 offensive rating after a defensive rebound by Russell Westbrook. And when they get a defensive rebound by anybody else, their offensive rating is still very good because they're very good in transition, but it drops to like 114. That extra 10 points per possession is just, that's why Steven Adams boxes out so hard, yeah. And that's why Westbrook hunts rebounds. And maybe it's, you know, we've had some...
I don't think that's exactly why.
Maybe it's not, but it's certainly a... It's certainly a positive aspect of his rebound hunting. Mm-hmm. If we're, you know, sort of looking at LeBron as sort of that terror in transition, which he has been his whole career and will continue to be until he decides to hang it up, probably.
Yeah.
And Lonzo is a good rebounding guard and is going to be a terror in transition.
Lonzo hit ahead passes to LeBron.
It's going to be great. And, yeah. And you know, and you get Svi running to run into the left corner and LeBron's running around the right wing. And yeah. And it's, so you're going to have situations where Mo Wagner is going to have a great rebounding game and he's going to grab two boards.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be boxing out the other team's center.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to see that across the board. Whoever they, you know, they end up going with as the starting center, because I don't.
It'll be McGee.
Yeah, I guess it'll be McGee. I don't think it's going to be Wagner. If it's going to be McGee, that's a little bit, you know, we'll see how that goes, because he's somebody who likes to go up and get his own rebounds and is not necessarily the cerebral sort of box out guy that you would hope that they would be able to sign. But, you know, Brook Lopez is already taken. And Robin Lopez is another one in terms of, you know, great box out guys. That would be a solid starting center. Obviously, you don't want to go out there and sign a guy literally just for his box out, you know, ability. But if you can find, you know, guys who fit that mold, I think that makes sense. And, you know, we may see by the end of the year that Wagner is the starting center or plays starting minutes, closes games because of his ability to box out and his ability to sort of play that Kevin Love light role in terms of just being a pick and pop partner or just a spot up guy in the corner who doesn't demand the sort of touches that Love does because of his, you know, immense skill offensively.
The big hang-up point with what the Lakers have done and what they might be capable of doing moving forward is LeBron willing to play the five? Because if he's willing to play the five, then that opens up all kinds of stuff. It makes basketball sense, but I don't know if culturally it makes sense.
It makes basketball sense in the playoffs when it matters.
Yeah.
We're not going to see that in the regular season.
I don't think so either.
We may not. I mean, we'll probably see him play the four because, you know, he probably just will. But, like, he's not going to want to play the four in the regular season. He's definitely not going to want to play the five.
Yeah.
And so in the playoffs, that will make sense.
Yeah.
You know, and
I could see, like, a playoff. I mean, I don't think they go with a lineup in the playoffs that they didn't use at all in the regular season. So I think you'll see it just kind of like, hey, LeBron, just check it out. And then we'll come back to it if it works in the playoffs, right? But if they go into a playoff kind of situation with Lonzo, KCP, or Hart, depending on how the season goes, Ingram, Kuzma, and LeBron, like, that's a fun lineup. Like,
yeah.
That's the kind of lineup that, you know, there is no competing against Golden State. But that's the kind of lineup that you just look at it like, wait, they had a what rating while they were out there? What were they doing on offense?
Yeah, that's going to be one of those small usage lineups that we're going to see 100 possessions of in the regular season, and they're going to be like plus 15, and we're going to be like, they need to start that lineup. Obviously, they won't. But, like, that's going to be a very solid lineup. I might even move Kuzma out of that lineup altogether and go Hart and KCP and just really try. I mean, that would be awfully small, but you could... I mean, if you're scoring,
big for his position.
Yeah, yeah, and KCP is big enough, and then Ingram, if he can, you know, if he's putting on some strength, and then LeBron, of course, is LeBron. That's doable. You know, I think that's obviously that's a 1-5 switch lineup. Everybody can guard everybody in that lineup. You know, Lonzo, of course, given his size and wingspan, can play up or down. You know, a couple of different positions. So I think that would be, you know, it'd be fascinating to see how they do that. You know, LeBron and the kids basically would be probably more fun than their actual starting lineup might be. And so it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how much LeBron at center we really see.
All right, so you're a cap guy. Right now, I think the plan is to hope that Ingram turns into a star and he becomes star number three alongside LeBron and whichever star most people are thinking, Kawhi, right? Is there a way for the Lakers to get to the have the ability to acquire a third star, or is it just it's basically find a way to shed Deng's salary next year, based on what I know about it, right? Find a way to shed Deng's salary next year, sign a superstar there, and then match contracts to be able to acquire a third one.
That is a possibility as well, but if they can get off all of Deng's contract, then they might just be able to outright sign to max free agents wow. next summer.
Because they do have a ton of expiring contracts.
They have a ton of expiring contracts. It won't be pure total max contracts because you just add up the percentages and it doesn't make sense because LeBron's going to make 35% yeah. roughly of the cap. And you only if you're using cap space, you literally have 100% of the cap. And if he takes up 35%, the kids are going to take up a decent mm-hmm. chunk as well. You can't sign three 35% guys
because
right. that's literally more than 100%. Like, it's just not yeah. math doesn't work there. So, you know, if they can get a guy who's willing to come for a little bit less than the max and then another guy who's, you know, like we talked about, Chris Middleton, somebody who can mimic the production of a max player for $10 million less than the max. $20 million for, you know, a guy like Chris Middleton is a significant pay bump over the, you know, 12 or 13 that he's making now. He'd get to be a Laker. He'd get to, you know, play next to LeBron. And that would be an ability to sign a third star who's really basically a very high-end role yeah, player rather than a legitimate star. If they need to do the three-star approach, then it would end up being a trade in terms of Ingram, Lonzo, yeah. somebody like that.
Sign and trade, maybe.
Kind of for sure, yeah. It'd have to be something like that.
Is that team... So let's say the Lakers... I don't think Klay Thompson is on the board because I think he really enjoys just making the amount of money that he makes... doing what he does off of the court, shooting a shit ton of threes, and being a warrior. But we've mentioned Middleton a couple times now. So if the Lakers have a lineup of Lonzo, Middleton, Ingram, well, I guess it'd be Kawhi, Ingram, and LeBron. Like, that's hot take. I think that competes against the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean you're still a little bit small, but in the playoffs, that's going to be fine. I mean, you might not see a ton of that in the regular season again, no. like we talked about with LeBron at the center position, but you know, you would see a ton of that in the playoffs against a team like Golden State, you know, maybe against a team even like Houston, depending on how much they, you know, depending on where Houston is with Clint Capella and all
we'll
that stuff.
We'll find out if Houston's owner just doesn't feel like paying anybody.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll come back and have an empty roster. We don't know what his deal is financially. You know, you can't speculate on his financial situation, but it certainly seems like something's going wrong with Houston's finances.
That's been a disaster.
So far, I mean, with Ariza gone and Luke Mbamute, and they can replace those guys to an extent, but like if Clint Capella takes the qualifying offer and walks next summer, that's a target for the Lakers for sure.
Has on multiple occasions said that he wants a Clint Capella type. If Clint Capella hits the open market, guess who's going to be the first person? Magic's going to be waiting outside Clint Capella's house for an hour.
Absolutely, and he would be right too, because Clint Capella is a fantastic player, and he would be a fantastic signing. And at that level, he's one of those guys, because he's so young, would be only worth 25% of the cap because he's within that first band of player. So he's, you know, you sign him to what would be about $26-27 million, 25% of the cap next year, and you could sign another a bigger max guy on top of that and make it work if you can get him. So, you know, that would obviously be, I think, the peak of the ceiling of this Lakers team would be if Clint Capella takes a qualifying offer and walks next year. But, you know, we'll see how he ends up.
The Lakers also benefit from the fact that the cap is going to be jumping in the next two seasons. And they signed LeBron to the rate that he's going to be signed at now. So, you know, those percentages change when the cap jumps up that way.
Yeah, a little bit. I think depending on exactly where the 2019-20 cap comes in, right now they have it projected at $109 million, which is not quite. So LeBron's contract goes up by 8% every year. And the so from the difference between 101.9 roughly is what the cap is now to 109 is not 8%. So he'll be making a little more than 35% of the max next year. But if the cap ends up at 111 because we have a longer playoffs or the regular season gets higher ratings or whatever, there's extra gambling revenue that we don't know when might hit.
That's going to be wild.
You know, if that hits in March or you know, whatever, I don't know when that's going to hit. I don't know much about that.
The ratings bump is a real thing.
The ratings bump.
A possibility with LeBron being a Laker.
Yeah, the ratings bump for those, and it's really, I don't know, because the ratings bump matters, but also those TV contracts are sort of already set. So it's really more about like, are there going to be a longer playoff series? We got 7 games in both the Western and Eastern Conference Finals, but we got a 4-game finals. If we end up with a bunch of 7-game series, the finals goes 6 games because some, you know, Boston comes out of the East and is actually what we think Boston might be able to be against the Warriors. We get a 6-game series there. We have some 7-game series, you know, earlier on, even the first round series between say like Utah and Portland or Utah and the Lakers, Utah and Denver. I like Utah, so I'm throwing Utah into all of these series. But all of those series look like they could be seven game series. We get a nice Philly Boston series on the other side. Indiana's going to be really frisky next year. Mm-hmm. You could see that 109 million bump up into the 110, 110 and a half, and all of a sudden every dollar is going to count for the Lakers next summer.
Yeah, that's going to be something to watch. All right, man. Well, thanks for hopping on with me. It's we are finishing this at 2 a.m. Vegas hours are just a different animal.
Yeah, I mean it's something, you know, you mentioned like, oh, let's hop on the podcast. You know, you said like, let's hop on the podcast. I'm like, okay, well, like let's do that in the morning. And you're like, no, we're gonna do this now. I'm like, all right, fine. Let's just get it done. 2 a.m. Like
popped up in another Angry Orchard and hopped on here.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thanks for hopping on. Again, follow him at JGSIEGEL. Follow earlybirdrights.com for all of the information that he just gave right there. Like, that was just a taste of it. And again, I like to support people who I respect. You do great work. And Peachtree Hoops and Locked On Hawks, what you do with Brad Rollin. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. Make sure you guys, I'm not quite sure, as I just alluded to, scheduling out here in Vegas is tough. But I will try to have as many guests as I can moving forward, and I will try to fill every single day while I'm out here while I can. But check out all the other shows. You know where to find those, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.